Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the VersaBank second quarter results conference call. I would now like to turn the call over to VersaBank for a brief introduction.
Good morning. This morning, VersaBank issued a news release reporting its financial results for the second quarter ended April 30th, 2020. That news release, along with the bank's financial statements, are available on the bank's website in the Investor Relations section. Please note that this quarter, VersaBank has begun webcasting its earnings conference calls over the Internet. The webcast is listen-only. If you are listening to the webcast but wish to ask a question in the Q&A section following Mr. Taylor's presentation, we ask you to please dial into the conference line, the details of which are included in this morning's news release and on the bank's website. For those participating in today's call by telephone, the accompanying slide presentation is available on the bank's website as well. Also, today's call will be archived for replay, both by telephone and via the Internet, beginning approximately 1 hour following completion of the call. Details on how to access the replays are available in this morning's news release. I would now like to remind you, our listeners, that statements about future events made on this call are forward-looking in nature and are based on certain assumptions and analysis made by VersaBank management. Actual results could differ materially from our expectations due to various material risks and uncertainties associated with VersaBank's businesses. Please refer to VersaBank's forward-looking statement advisory, which is on slide 2. I would now like to turn the call over to David Taylor, President and Chief Executive Officer of VersaBank. Please go ahead, Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. With me via teleconference is Sean Clark, Chief Financial Officer, Ali Lalani, Chief Risk Officer, and Brent Hodge, General Counsel, as we continue to practice social distancing, as we have done for more than 2 months now. For those that are interested, I'm broadcasting from our Innovation Center at London Airport, which, other than birds flying, is somewhat deserted today. In fact, VersaBank, with our branchless technology-based model and our small, efficient employee base, is ideally suited to effectively manage through the current environment. As we have since the beginning of the pandemic, we continue to work to ensure the safety and wellness of our employees, and substantially all of our banking staff are working remotely with virtually no operational issues. Supported by our recently implemented two-factor authentication virtual private network, providing the highest level of security. We are also continuing to strengthen and enhance our already robust risk management processes with specific focus on the prudent mitigation of potential elevated credit, liquidity risk exposures. Our ongoing approach to risk mitigation had the bank very well positioned entering into this unprecedented economic environment, an unprecedented time. We built VersaBank for stability and success in all economic environments. While no one expected the current situation, we were certainly prepared for it. Although it has been 90 days since our last call, the world and the macroeconomic situation outlook have changed considerably. Against this backdrop, there are several matters specifically related to VersaBank that I want to highlight at the outset, as I think it's absolutely vital for VersaBank shareholders and prospective investors to understand. First, with respect to point-of-sale financing portfolio, I want to be clear that we have extremely low exposure here. At first blush, one might think the portfolio is highly exposed to credit risk. However, consistent with our risk-averse approach to our entire banking operations, these loans and leases are structured such that each loan we hold back funds from our partners, such that these holdbacks are still more than three times in excess of their intrinsic risk. In addition, as I'll discuss in a moment, the bank has temporarily increased its cash balance and surplus regulatory capital for the near term. Turning to our results, the financial performance during Q2 continues to be the highlight. VersaBank and its efficient low-risk model as a standout in the Canadian banking and financial institution landscape. And I want to note at the outset that the bank's strong performance in Q2 was tempered by the cautious stance we took in the back half of the quarter as the pandemic and the impact on the broader economy began to take hold. I'm going to specifically call out revenue this quarter as it provides additional perspective on the performance before the higher provisions for credit losses, which we increased in Q2 out of an abundance of caution. I'll discuss this more in a moment. Revenue increased by 14% year-on-year to a record $14.9 million due to strong year-over-year growth in overall loan portfolio and yield held steady. Net interest margin for Q2 expanded 13 basis points year-on-year to one of the highest in our history, 3.08%, up from 2.95%, which continues to be the highest amongst our peer group. Again, I will note that net interest margin in Q2 this year was dampened by our conservatism, most notably our decision to increase our cash balance in the back half of the quarter. For perspective, at normal cash levels in our historical range of 6 to 7%, net interest margin would have been in the area of 3.5%. The strong year-over-year improvement, even with the higher cash balances, was driven primarily by low cost of funds, which declined to 1.75%. Net income increased 5% year-over-year to $5.1 million, or 22 cents per share, from $4.9 million, or 21 cents per share. And core cash earnings, or CCE, also increased 5% to $7.1 million, or 34 cents per share. Recall that by not paying cash taxes, VersaBank is building regulatory capital about 27% faster than those banks that are paying cash taxes. As I noted a moment ago, as expected, out of an abundance of caution, the bank increased its provision for credit losses this quarter by an additional $490,000, which dampened both net income and CCE. As I will discuss in a moment, despite the increase, VersaBank still leads the industry with respect and, in fact, has no doubt significantly widened the gap over the large Schedule 1 banks based on Q2 results we are seeing. In terms of key balance sheet metrics and capital ratios, our financial position at the end of Q2 continues to reflect the financial strength and stability of the bank. At VersaBank, risk management is in our DNA. It is fundamentally built into our model and is an overriding consideration in every decision we make. Accordingly, as we saw the COVID-19 pandemic begin to impact the broader economy and financial market, and before knowing how the Bank of Canada would proceed, again, out of abundance of caution, especially with the hindsight of 2007, we made the prudent decision to temporarily increase our cash balances for the near term to add an additional layer of liquidity during these unprecedented times. Our cash balance at the end of the second quarter 2020 was $340 million, or about 17% of average assets, up from the bank's historical range of 6 to 7% of average assets. We have since increased this such that our cash balance currently sits at approximately $420 million, and at the end of the second quarter 2020, the bank had more than $80 million in surplus and regulatory capital over Basel III minimums. It looks now, though, we may have been somewhat overly cautious through this period. However, this small short-term impact is easily justified by the need for prudence, and importantly, we now have the capacity to advantageously deploy capital to a number of potential opportunities we see VersaBank emerging out of the current environment. As I mentioned, in the current uncertain economic environment, we have taken an even more cautious stance than typical for our risk-averse bank. In fact, we've often heard that we don't take on enough risk. But even pre the COVID-19 pandemic, we had been already reducing our project financing loans as that market seemed to be topping out, and we made the conscious decision to increase our cash reserves. Diving a little deeper into the bank's increased credit provisions, at the end of the second quarter, those watching the broader industry will have seen and will continue to see over the next few days enormous increases in loss provisions by our peer group, and especially the large banks. However, because of our low-risk model, our provisions at the end of Q2 are just 15 basis points of average loans. And as a reminder, our access to very low-cost funding, including insolvency deposits, at their current rate of zero, enables us to generate the highest net interest margin in our peer group while mitigating risk through lower-risk lending. You can see in this graph that VersaBank's provisions as a proportion of average loans at the end of Q2, even at the highest level in our history, are still less than half that of the big bank's average, even before their significant increases in Q2. With a history of no loan losses, we believe we have been very conservative with our provisions, and I want to specifically note here that we have not taken any loss provisions for our point of sale financing portfolio, which we previously referred to as e-commerce. As a reminder, our point of sale business provides access to capital and proprietary technology for financing companies who support big ticket consumer purchases such as hot tubs, cosmetic surgery, motorcycles, etc. As I mentioned earlier, we structure these loans such that we hold back a portion of the payment for these loans in cash that essentially provides insurance should the consumer default on the loans. In addition, in our construction lending portfolio, which is mainly composed of loans to build apartment blocks, the majority of these projects are nearing completion, which significantly limits risk. As I mentioned earlier, our strong performance in Q2 was in part driven by our continued reduction of our cost of funds, which declined to 1.75%. To a large degree, the result of the higher proportion of zero-interest insolvency professional deposits and nearly zero-interest point-of-sale holdbacks. We're also benefiting from the lower-cost GIC environment. Importantly, in the context of the current and expected economic business environment, we expect to see our cost of funds to further decline over the quarters to come, as the proportion of deposits from insolvency professionals increases due to, unfortunately, higher bankruptcies. On the lending side of our business, our total portfolio expanded to $1.9 billion in assets, up from $1.7 billion at the end of Q2 last year. That $1.9 billion breaks down to just shy of $1 billion for our point-of-sale loans and leases, around $620 million for our commercial banking portfolio, which itself is composed of about $257 million in commercial mortgages and $363 million in project financing and other loans. And finally, the $340 million in cash. As a side note, we are now using the name point of sale here, as we think it is more reflective of the portfolio itself, and also to augment our concerted effort to simplify our story for the investment community, because we think it's a good story. As I noted earlier, the point of sale portfolio is very well insulated from credit risk. While this portfolio has experienced excellent momentum over the past 5 years or so, not surprisingly, we do expect to see some contraction in the coming quarters as loan origination has come to a near standstill during the pandemic lockdown. While we can't predict when consumers will start buying again, we are optimistic that the rebound will reflect pent-up demand, especially given that the bulk of job losses thus far appear to have impacted lower wage earners. In our commercial banking portfolio, as I have discussed for a number of quarters now, we have been letting our construction loan portfolio run off somewhat as we became more cautious in what was becoming an overheated real estate climate. That said, we are now pivoting back to opportunities in the public sector, where we believe there will be strong demand as governments undertake stimulus projects and grapple with loss of tax revenues. We have started actively pursuing these opportunities and, in fact, have a long track record of success and performance in this area of lending. Not surprisingly, because of their government ties, these are low-risk weighted loans that, due to our low cost of funding model, we can turn to and still generate strong net interest margins. In addition, with the best leverage ratio amongst Canadian Schedule I banks, we have a lending capacity of more than $2 billion to put to work in these types of loans. With the objective to end fiscal 2020 with an overall loan portfolio approximately equal to or potentially larger than that at the end of 2019. Before I open the call to questions, I want to spend a few minutes on our overall risk mitigation strategy because it's a core part of what we consider to be our value proposition as a publicly traded bank. We look at risk in mainly three different ways: credit risk, liquidity risk, and operational risk. I talked earlier about our credit risk mitigation, and we feel good about where we are right now. Again, credit provisions we have taken this quarter, although substantially up, are still by far the lowest in our industry. On operational risk, if the pandemic has proven anything to us, it's that our highly efficient branchless technology-based model, which requires very small headcount, is more than up for such a formidable challenge. Finally, liquidity risk. We're always conservative here and are being even more prudent in the current environment. We continue to have access to a vast supply of low-cost funds, and our liquidity ratio currently stands at 20%. Before I wrap things up, just a quick note on our DRT Cyber. Beyond the economic consequences this global pandemic has had a broader and deeper impact on the way they work and interact socially, it has precipitated a step function change across the spectrum of online activities and behaviors that were already gradually evolving. Clearly, security is the very center of all this, and the last several months have highlighted its fundamental importance, the significant room for improvement, and the many opportunities it presents. Importantly for VersaBank, we believe this is a very positive implications for DRT Cyber subsidiary overall and specifically for VersaVault, as well as some of the additional offerings we are working on and getting close to launching. To conclude, we entered Q2 of 2020 with significant momentum in our business. Although COVID-19 pandemic and the bank's additional caution in this environment will dampen growth in the second half of the year, we remain well positioned to capitalize on opportunities presented by the new economic climate and expect to return to our trajectory of earnings growth. We believe the current environment presents more opportunity than it does challenges or risks. Accordingly, our growth strategy remains very much intact. And let's continue to lower our cost of funds to support industry's leading margin and continue to pursue long-term growth with near-term transition back to our previous success in the public sector project financing as we look forward to the resumption of point-of-sale loan and lease origination. We also look forward to the launch of Direct Connect application for home and condo builders and sales agents, which entered beta testing this past quarter. While the pandemic has not surprisingly paused this process, this is a long-term opportunity for the bank that builds on the success of the point-of-sale business, allowing us to enter the residential mortgage sector in a profitable way with a high-value-add offering for the industry. another unmet need that we are addressing. Importantly, we have significant capacity, more than $2 billion at the ready to capitalize on our near-term and long-term opportunities. Finally, we will continue to explore acquisition opportunities to generate step function growth in our loan portfolio, and with the challenges created by the current environment for many of our peers, we certainly think there is more opportunity and more value than there was just a few months ago. And with that, I'd like to open up the call to questions. Operator?
Thank you. Yes, thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. And our first question is from Stephen Boland. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, Steve.
Okay, great. Dave, could you go back to the point-of-sale loan, or it used to be the e-commerce? I guess I'm surprised that, that portfolio is still performing really well. And just in terms of what, maybe two parts. The first is what impact, because it is consumer purchases, what's your outlook for the next couple quarters? And then maybe you mentioned that the loans have a surplus portion. I presume that surplus really depends on the maturity of the loan. So as the loan matures, you put the surplus up and eventually the loan turns into a positive surplus. I guess it would be a surplus. But I guess what I'm trying to say is the maturity of the loan matter in terms of the size of the surplus. Is there a point where that surplus runs out?
Well, good question, Steve, as always. Yeah, we've renamed publicly that portfolio point of sale because that's what it is. They're loans that are made at the point of sale. For the most part, they're consumer loans, as I mentioned, with the various categories, motorcycles, hot tubs, and such. And there's a portion that are also to small businesses. And yes, indeed, that portfolio would have been hit fairly hard by the pandemic, and what I call the intrinsic risk in it, the propensity for default, say would have gone up from an average of about $8 million or so in the billion-dollar portfolio to closer to $30 million or so in the portfolio. So it's like a huge increase in propensity to default. However, we hold back at the time of purchase of these loans in total about $100 million. So when I said we have about three times the intrinsic risk in the portfolio, I meant we've held back so much additional cash collateral that it's able to absorb the no doubt increase in defaults that will take place in the portfolio. Three times is a lot. So one sec, I'm just going to stop that. Now, with respect to the maturity on the portfolio, they are of short duration, but most. Well, these guys won't quit, Steve. Let's. Yeah, they are short duration. In fact, most of our portfolio is short duration, or it's about 1.5 years assets, 1.5 years liabilities. So that is a significant risk mitigator in that they pay off rather rapidly when you're calculating your ECLs. But we take the cash collateral up front when we buy the loan. So if anything, as the loans start to pay down, the cash collateral goes higher and higher. And then we have a mechanism in some cases where we release some of the cash back to the vendor of the loan.
Okay. And maybe you could just like the, not so much on the credit side, but the origination side, there must be a slowdown since, you know, there is a portion, well, they're consumer loans, but portions of those have been impacted, right? Certain sectors more than others.
Absolutely. It's been a huge slowdown. It's just down to a trickle. You know, the lockdown is pretty well stopped at point of sale financing and purchases. Now, mind you, we're somewhat optimistic. There'll be, as I was saying, there'll be a bit of pent-up demand coming and it'll come back. I don't expect too quickly, but towards the end of the year, the fiscal year, we'll probably see you know, a fair percentage come back. But right now it's down to, it's just a dwindle of deals we're seeing.
Okay. And I guess that would be since, I guess it would be mostly April, May, and then we'll see what happens. So we should expect a large decline in revenue like going forward.
From that portfolio, yes, going forward.
Okay.
We have on the other side of the lending, Ross Duggan's commercial banking side. So we're saying we've pivoted into public sector project financing, and that's where, you know, you're familiar, that's where we started, actually, mainly in small communities throughout the north, and we're back at it again, and we're hoping that we'll be able to make up some of the lack of lending in the point of sale business with some public sector drawdowns. Mind you, that'll probably take a few months too.
Is there something changed in that? Is it, I mean, the yields, if I remember, the yields got really thin in that business and it was really competitive. Is it due just to the overall government stimulus, something that's happened there that's made the business more attractive?
Yeah, exactly. We expect that governments, small and large, will take on projects. I think they should. That's a good way to put people back to work. And we stand ready, of course, as we have in the past, to provide the financing. The thing that's changed is that our cost of funds has got getting lower and lower because of the operational accounts that we're issuing. So the proportion of deposits that we receive, say, from the insolvency professionals will likely grow higher and higher. It's a good counterbalance to the lack of revenue in the other portfolios, in that what is terrible for others in the lending side brings to us a bonus, in that it supplies us with a lot more and presently zero cost deposits. So while our cost of funds is descending, it means that we can finance public sector projects and still earn quite a large margin. And as you know, some of them are, well, most of them are 20% risk weighted. So, you know, theoretically, we get five times the return on risk weighted capital with a loan like that. So, yeah, it's opening up. The two drivers, I expect to be a big demand for project financing in the public sector area, and our cost of funds is getting to record lows.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks, guys.
Steve.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. And we have a question from Ryan Smith. Please go ahead.
Well, hi. First, another fantastic job, and I really like the fact that you did exactly what you said you were going to do on the last call, and you performed extremely well. So congratulations to your team. Now, one of the things that's curious to me is that your investment in the VersaVault, you've said you've commercialized it, but have you had any beta trials? Do you have a pipeline of potential sales? Since that seems to be a focus, is to try to build out the business technology by selling the technology to others rather than, you know, enhancing your own bank's capacity to do banking.
Yeah, beta testing took place a few years ago. It's up and running, and we leased it, the VersaVault technology, out to a financial company in Europe called Chairman's Financial. And they have acquired a number of customers. It is working, it is functioning, and is providing revenue to our subsidiary DRT Cyber. Not a lot of revenue. There's been a fair amount of caution in the it's mainly used by the cryptocurrency exchanges, so there's a fair amount of caution in that area. But most recently, I noted that one of the large U.S. banks has opened up accounts for crypto, the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world, and has a similar safekeeping as our vault. We don't think it's as good. So we see a market opening up. There is use as a bank for a digital vault to keep high value assets safe and secure, and our vault will do that. Although we haven't seen a lot of demand for it in Canada. In the United States, there seems to be a lot more demand. So we're exploring the U.S. market with the VersaVault. And as I was saying earlier, we've got a number of other software projects in DRT Cyber that we'll be launching. They're projects that we do for our bank. And we think they have applicability all across the world. That's what I'm thinking of, is a cloud-based application that our bank certainly will be using. And hopefully others will too.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, I have another question if possible.
Sure.
In terms of, I guess, the potential acquisition, Would you be looking at a technology platform like the VersaVault, or would you be looking at some way to increase the scale of the banking business? If a banking business is it somehow a bank that's inefficiently using technology, so is it a portfolio? What exactly do you see yourself scaling?
Well, first and foremost, we would be delighted to acquire other banks, maybe smaller banks that haven't quite got to the efficiency levels that our technology allows us to get to. So we believe there's a few out there that are below their efficient sizes and don't have our access to cheap funding and our technology advantage. So that would be ideal, in that we have a lot of capacity, and we'd like to bring it to bear and grow our portfolio more rapidly than it looks like we're going to be able to grow it organically for the next while. So first and foremost, other financial institutions operating in Canada that may think it's better to sell themselves than to keep on with a suboptimal operation. And in the technology side, there are a few technology firms that seem like they'd be nice tuck-ins to the DRT Cyber suite of cybersecurity products. We are looking at some, but nothing right yet.
Okay. So it's more the former then. Okay.
Yeah, it's the former. That's... if you have a look at our ratios, we've got a lot of surplus capital.
Otherwise, I'd be asking you about buybacks, but I have you've proven yourself to be such great operators that I really want you guys to deploy capital, even if the market doesn't recognize it now.
Well, if the regulator hadn't made the nationwide decree to no buybacks, I'd certainly be buying back shares. Even just a small amount, we have so much capital, and at $5.50 a share, my goodness, how can you go wrong, right?
Exactly. So, it's extremely mispriced. It must be, frustrating. But I assume there's some sort of, I've noticed the insiders have stopped by, so I assume there's some sort of acquisition issue going on, that's why. But you obviously can't comment on that, so.
No, we can't.
So I guess I'm in an enviable position as being in the dark, but able to buy. So, But yes, it's quite amazing what you've done with the technology in the bank, and the other banks are, as you say, are reporting enormous loan losses. So, anyways, keep up the great work, guys.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, I mean, just on there is looking at our big bank partners. Well, they're directly exposed to the consumer and small business market, and we are, you know, we have the holdbacks to protect us. So that's what you'd expect. They have great years, and every so often something like this comes along and they take larger provisions. That's just their model. Ours is different because we're so small. So we manage ourselves so we won't be subject to large losses and provisions.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck deploying the capital that you have, and I wish you all the best. Thank you for, again, having an excellent presentation as well.
Well, thank you, Ryan.
Usually I'm not this complimentary so to companies, but you guys are ones that I tell my students to look at.
Okay. Hopefully it continues that way.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting over back to you, Mr. Taylor.
Well, thank you, everybody, for dialing in and listening. And as we were saying earlier, this information will be available on our website if you want some further detail. And please feel free to send me an email if you have another question that you think of later. And I look forward to catching up with you at the end of August. Thank you.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.